Well, thank you, Mr. Announcer, and what a pleasure it is to be back in a wonderful town that I spent some time at, University of Michigan. We're in Ann Arbor, and this is a beautiful, I'm thinking for Mother's Day, what a wonderful place to come by before Mother's Day and pick up a wonderful couple of gifts for Mom. I went and looked in the little gift market there, the gift store. Some wonderful ideas if you've got a mom that's hard to shop for. As our Pure Michigan Tour brings us to Washtenaw County as part of Destination Ann Arbor's spring promotion efforts and in recognition of National Travel and Tourism Week, which we're in the midst of until May 9th. What is today? Today is
the 7th.
7th, all right, very good. I'm just looking at my clock, and I know it's not April 24th. I know that. You might be able to pull a fast one on me, but that one I knew wasn't right.
I think that clock is Central Time. I think it's April 24th in Central Time.
Maybe that's what it is. We are brought to you by Destination Ann Arbor, and we do appreciate that. And Chad Wiebesick, thank you for your sponsorship and help. Go to AnnArbor.org, and you can find out more of the great things happening in our area. That voice you heard magically, Mike Parsons. He is our executive producer. Danielle Mason running all the switches with Ray Templin here doing that. Rich Luzinski, Renee Vitale taking care of our WJR traffic and weather first. Of course, did I mention Ava? Ava is here. Ava DiMaggio. She watches the purse strings, makes sure that everybody is in order and gets paid properly and all the other stuff you're supposed to do. We've got a lot going on. Imagine, I like Marco Rubio, and I've liked him a long time, but imagine the president saying, and I'm not going to try to do an imitation of President Trump, but the president saying, Marco, I need you to go to the Vatican and smooth things out with the Pope. And then while you're on your way there, the president continues to lash out at the Pope. You talk about making his job more difficult.
Awkward in the very least.
Can you imagine? I mean, yes, awkward, yes. Hi, we don't want to have any problems. No, I didn't hear what the president said today because I was in the air, but, oh, he did? Well, trust me, he doesn't really mean that. So, I mean, what do you do? What a job that is.
Well, it was like earlier this week, Marco Rubio came out and he did an update from his point of view on what was going on with Iran and the Straits of Hormuz. And then, yep. You know, a few minutes later, Donald Trump came out and said the exact opposite.
Right. Hard to figure, hard to follow. And this whole conversation about, we're not going to go deeply into it right now, but this, well, we're waiting. There's a one-page memo that if Iran agrees, we're going to be. Iran has lied since Iran has existed. And it no longer was Persia, it was Iran, and they took away women's rights and all the other stuff. And any agreement they've ever made, they've broken. They've lied about it. So what makes them think, at least they're not wasting paper by coming up with a 150-page result. It's a one-page memo.
It's more of a cover letter, yeah.
Okay, maybe they should have just done it with a cover letter. Anyway, we'll see what happens. It is Thursday, I do know that for sure, and it is May 7th. In fact, at Skyline High School Theater in Ann Arbor tonight at 7 p.m., the United States Air Force Band of Mid-America will be performing for a part of the Freedom 250 with free 90-minute family-friendly concerts featuring the 50-member concert band with patriotic favorites, inspiring stories of our nation's heritage, original works, and Broadway classics. Boundless Horizons, United States Air Force Band of Mid-America, today, tonight, 7 o'clock, Skyline High School, right here in Ann Arbor, and I want to mention that. And by the way, this Saturday, May 9th, according to our judge friend Fred Mester, we're looking at the Salvation Army William Booth Legal Aid Clinic with their annual Walk for Justice at the Detroit Zoo at 8 a.m. this Saturday. This is a family-friendly event featuring prizes, live entertainment, refreshments, a great opportunity to experience a world-class zoo while supporting an important and worthy cause. And I got my message here from Tony Michaels, the Ford fireworks kicking off our summer. in Detroit. They're booked for Monday, June 22nd. The Parade Company and Ford Motor Company partnership brings Detroit one of America's most stunning fireworks shows. And the 2026 Ford Fireworks theme is Detroit, Go for Launch. And WJR will be there broadcasting in advance of the actual fireworks from 7 till 9 p.m. And I look forward to having you join us for that. And then since we're talking about things this summer, how about Monday, July 13th, let's meet at the Country Club of Detroit, one of the finest country clubs in the country, and it will be the Lomas Brown Jr. Golf Classic. You can go to lomasbrowngolfclassic.com, lomasbrowngolfclassic.com, sign up to play, sign up to be a sponsor, just be a part of that. So we're looking forward to that. What else is going on, Michael? Anything we need to be on top of? Well, we get Pistons tonight.
Pistons tonight. Last night, the Tigers lost. They were without A.J. Hinch because the night before there was a it wasn't really a fight, but there was a bench-clearing disagreement when Framber Valdez threw a ball into the middle of the back of one of the Red Sox. And Valdez was suspended for 5 games, which rightfully so. But I don't know why.
Why did the coach get suspended?
That was my question, too. I mean, unless he's the one who told them to hit him, which I don't think
I guarantee that AJ did not do that.
But I'm as puzzled as you, Paul. I'm like, what the heck did AJ Hinch do?
Well, there's a story, an interesting story below the fold in today's Detroit News. You might want to read, as did I. Chris McCoskey said a video suggests grip stealing before the Valdez pitch that hit the batter. Have you ever heard of that? I mean, we've heard of signal and sign stealing and all of that. But grip stealing, first of all, is legal. And that's apparently where a guy on the base can see how the pitcher is gripping the ball and surmise what kind of pitch is coming next. And he lets the batter know.
Wow. I mean,
because everybody was hitting the ball.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he got roughed up a couple innings before, and then he gave up back-to-back home runs, and that's when he plunked the guy. I mean, you've got to have good eyesight for that. I don't know how you can see that all the way from second base, but
I don't know either. But but they could see it, and they were passing it along. But again, grip stealing, they say, in the story in the Detroit News, is legal. So who knew? I don't even think I ever heard of that concept before. Seeing how the pitcher is putting his fingers on the ball. Anyway,
guess you gotta be good at hiding it.
I guess we are live from the Mathai Botanical Gardens in Ann Arbor, presented by Destination Ann Arbor. Our relentless positive radio is bringing you along for a wonderful adventure. And I say again, in advance of Mother's Day, and a little store here is, I think, a great place to look for that hard-to-find gift for mom if she likes flowers. And what mom does not like? Flowers and botanical gardens. That's what I want to know. And you can give her a trip here or bring her here, and she'd be thrilled. We're staying on top of all the news that is out there, as well as meeting some of the nice people that make everything nice happen here. In fact, we'll start right off with Anthony Kalonick, the director of U of M's Mathai Botanical Gardens. And by the way, the Nichols Arboretum. So we got lots to talk about as we get underway. Paul W. Smith, an hour early. We thank you for that extra time, and we continue on WJR. Well, we're excited about America's 250th anniversary, and WJR has been around for, 102 years. So we've been around a long while celebrating this great country of ours. In 1907, nestled between Getty's Road and the Huron River, the seeds were sown for a project that would come to symbolize the university's dedication toward plant life and nature's preservation, the Botanical Garden and Arboretum, originally spanning only 80 acres, this establishment marked the foundation of what is recognized today as Nichols Arboretum. And now, over a century later, the scope of the mission has broadened significantly with a commitment to botanical growth, nature conservation, research excellence, which can be seen throughout the management of an expansive expansive expanse, good usage, of more than 800 acres, encapsulating gardens, farmland, research areas, and natural preserves across the Ann Arbor region. As we arrived this morning, there were 25 people on the stairs about to go out and enjoy their guided tour of this fabulous Mathai Botanical Gardens. And today we're here presented by Destination Ann Arbor and the man who makes sure that everyone's happy here at U of M's Mathai Botanical Gardens and Nichols Arboretum is the director, Anthony Kolenek.
Hello.
Nice to meet you. Nice to see you.
Likewise. Thanks, Paul.
I have never been here. I'm trusting that a number of my listeners have never been here. So please tell us all about what this is all about.
Well, thanks. Great question. We have a unique opportunity here as a botanical gardens because we are very much a publicly engaged and public serving place, but we're also part of the university. So at our very best, we're able to break down that barrier between the broader community and the university and become a place where research and learning are visible, experienceable, but also at the same time, a beautiful place where we can improve our own lives, learn about the natural world and our relationships to plants.
You have, in fact, from what I'm told, the largest heirloom peony collections in North America.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was quite something. You mentioned that WJR is 102 years old. The
right.
Peony Garden is, I think, 104. So we're near neighbors in terms of dates. But it was established through a gift from the W.E. Upjohn, the Upjohn family.
There you go again. And those damn millionaires and billionaires that are ruining America. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, in this case, he, in 1922, he donated his personal peony collection to the University of Michigan, his alma mater.
Yep.
And we are the stewards of that collection. It's now accredited and registered in the American Peony Society, has been a great supporter of ours in helping us continue to do research in the field.
What's a peonies look like?
What do they look like? Well, they're about the size, generally speaking, the bloom is about the size of a grapefruit. There are usually 40 or so blooms per shrub or bush plant. And it is hardy as can be. They come in pinks, whites, all different colors along that spectrum, purples, deep burgundies. They are a favorite of pollinators. They're tough as can be. You can ignore them and they'll thrive.
That's my kind of flower.
Mine too. You'd think as the director of a botanical garden, I'd be more of a green thumb, but no, I have to stick to those hardy plants myself.
I have to tell you, I've just completely embarrassed my wife, Kim, and her mother, my mother-in-law, the sweet Earlene Kettle. Earlene is a master gardener,
ooh,
and she's embarrassed, I'm sure, right now that I had to ask what a peonies looked like. But I just wouldn't remember that sort of thing, and I also don't know, are we in the peak bloom season, or when
just
is it?
Just weeks away, about 2-3 weeks from now, starting at end of May through the first week or two of June. That 3-week, 4-week period will be a real explosion of plant life and blooms. It'll be like the Tulip Festival in Holland, kind of.
And it'll be that busy here.
Yeah, yeah.
People, obviously the people in the know yeah, when that peak season is, and they come in.
That's right.
And there's parking in front, and then there's much more parking, secondary parking, I think, off to the side.
Yeah, and then the peony garden itself at that location, we'll have shuttles running as well.
So, I see I've been saying peonies, but it's the peony.
Well,
it's all right.
It can be.
Is like, one a peony and more than one a peonies?
I hope so.
I went through this. I've gone through this before. Okay, so whatever it is, you know what we're talking about because
yes,
you care about this. You know, I did not understand how the Nichols Arboretum played. I, as a Michigan grad, I spent a lot of time in the Nichols
Arcade.
Arcade.
Yeah.
And now, as a non-grad, I spend time there because of the cigar store.
Yeah.
You know, so the Nichols Arcade, it's all tied together, apparently.
Yeah, different families.
Really?
Really, truly, different spelling, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I only recently figured this out myself.
Well, and so, God bless all of the families that have given back to their communities for all of this glory. Now you have the indoor conservatory with plants from across the globe. Tell us a little bit about that. Anthony Kolenek, director of U of M's Mathai Botanical Gardens and Nichols Arboretum, sitting across from me. And did I hear you like Tony as opposed to Anthony?
Either one's fine, but right. Tony.
Anthony, when you're in trouble.
That's
Anthony!
It.
I understand completely. So tell us about the indoor conservatory.
Sure. So the conservatory here at the Botanical Gardens has three main houses, and there's a tropical house, a temperate house, and an arid house. They're separated by temperature and humidity. As you can imagine, different ecosystems. So the tropical house has plants, generally speaking, from the equator area around the globe, the temperate from the layer above that, and then the arid from the driest areas of our globe. And it's a place where you can learn about and start a relationship or maybe recover a relationship from your community of origin or wherever it may be to these plants. We had, for example, a chef come, and cardamom is something we have in here. It's also used in a lot of traditional recipes in Finland. So, a family recipe and relationship was rekindled recently.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
That's very cool. And, you know, this is, I am geographically challenged. I don't hide that from anybody. But this is part of the ARB.
That's right.
And I certainly was well aware of the ARB.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize that. The living landscape.
That's it. Yeah, that's essentially five locations. These two preserves, the campus farm, the botanical gardens, and the arboretum, all under one organization.
A place to wander, to contemplate, to learn, connect with nature.
Yep.
And God bless you for keeping it up and making it so special, because I think it's very important.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
Any information we can give? How about a website, maybe?
Sure, sure. If you go to mbgna.umich.edu, you can find
out. Wait a minute. I'm not driving and I'm trying to write it down. NBGNA?
Yep.
Okay.
.umich.edu.
Okay. All right. NBGNA.umich.edu.
That's it.
Very good. What a pleasure it is meeting you. Thanks for having us here. Tony Kolenek, the director of University of Michigan's Mathai Botanical Gardens and Nichols Arboretum. It's a pleasure.
Likewise.
You love what you're doing, don't you?
I absolutely do.
Well, that's great. Good. You're doing it very well.
Thank you.
It's 11:28 at 760 WJR. As we continue from this beautiful garden, if you will, and happily so, here at the Mathai Botanical Gardens, and we're presented by Destination Ann Arbor, and happily so. But we are keeping track of what else is going on in the world, and there's a lot going on. Jonathan Savage is going to help us make sense of right now about 150 passengers still on board a cruise ship grappling with this deadly hantavirus outbreak. Three confirmed cases at last check, and five suspected cases have been reported. Officials do expect that count to grow, and the vessel is now headed for Spain's Canary Islands as officials race to trace the victim's contacts. And I think somebody on the Canary Islands, one of their leaders, says, we don't want them. So I don't know what's going on, but Jonathan does. Jonathan Savage, Fox News correspondent and WJR contributor. Nice to have you here this afternoon, Jonathan. What can you tell us about this situation?
Well, the Canary Islands politician, Paul, has been overruled by the central government in Spain, so the ship is heading for Tenerife in the Canaries. The World Health Organization has given us an update in the last couple of hours. They are doing so in order to reassure people, to try and calm fears, because one of the main lines, I suppose, was that this is not, they say, another COVID pandemic. They say hantaviruses like this one spread very differently and through prolonged contact. Now, of course, this is a very serious situation, isn't it? 8 suspected cases from this cruise ship, 3 people have died, and as you were saying, the incubation period means we are warned that most cases could certainly follow. But they are trying to reassure people that the public health risk is low, they have procedures in place, and this should not become a major global issue.
Well, and it also is, frankly, having cruised 100 times, it is not also thought of as a cruise ship problem, generally speaking. But that being said, we still don't know how this happened, do we? Well, there was some talk about some guy who got on who obviously had this virus before he got on the ship.
Well, here's what they believe. This is what is currently the main theory. A Dutch couple were in South America, in Chile, Uruguay, and Argentina. They were on a bird watching a tourist trip, and among the places they went to was a location where rats known to carry the hantavirus disease were present. It is believed, certainly theorized, that this couple somehow came into contact with the rats or their droppings or other surfaces that have been contaminated. They became infected themselves, and while not showing any symptoms at that point, boarded the cruise ship in Argentina. They subsequently became ill and died, but by that point had spread the disease on to other passengers. At the news conference, the WHO was asked what is different about this outbreak, and they say it's because it was on a boat. It was on a ship where people are in close proximity.
And apparently you can get this just from breathing the expelled air of somebody who is suffering from the hantavirus.
You can, but not in the same way as COVID or the flu. It doesn't transmit quite so easily. It's really rare for hantavirus to spread from person to person. You need prolonged contact, for example, by sharing a cabin with someone on a cruise ship, or by providing health care to someone who's infected. And in fact, of 3 people who were given a medical evacuation from the ship yesterday, one of them was the ship's doctor.
Again, I hate to be very specific, but you've pointed something out, Jonathan Savage. Human hantavirus infection is primarily transmitted through contact with the urine, feces, or saliva of infected rodents. And it is uncommon. Limited human-to-human transmission has been reported in previous outbreaks per the World Health Organization. So it's an ugly thought. But the other question that came up, and I saw it in USA Today, and that is, the question is, are there rats or mice on cruise ships? And my first reaction would be, yeah, there are rats everywhere. I lived in New York City. I lived in on the 40th floor. I saw rats. I don't know how they take the elevator, apparently, when we're sleeping. I'm not sure. But rats are everywhere, and they exist. But according to this, generally, no. According to Walt Nadolny, a professor emeritus of marine transportation and global business at the State University of New York Maritime College, former environmental officer for Carnival Cruise Line, blah, 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 says no, he's never seen a rodent or evidence of rodent droppings on cruise ships, which is kind of surprising, but that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, next time you go on a cruise ship, have a look at the ropes when it's moored, when it's tied up at the dock. Around many of these ropes, you will see discs, and these discs are anti-rat devices. They're meant to block the rat from traveling up the ropes and then getting into the ships that way. And in fact, you don't see them at cruise ships. You see them on yachts and small boats in harbors as well. So they have a very simple method to try and stop rats from getting on board these ships. They do appear to be fairly effective.
So in the rat family, that's when they discuss, they say, you know, Grandpa Rat knew the ropes. Okay, so, you know, I don't have that many rat jokes, so that's it. That's it for now. But, you know, as you say that, I think I have seen those little discs on those ropes on cruise ships, and now it makes a great deal of sense because it would keep rats from being able to climb on board the ship.
Yeah, and that's really important, isn't it? Because it is a confined space with people in very close proximity, and rats carry diseases as we know, as we are finding out at this very moment. So yeah, it's a reality of life at sea that you have to try and keep rats at bay.
Well, and I'm going to take out another opportunity to say this. And my Grandpa Harry, who lived to be 100, maybe 30, 40 years ago when it wasn't popular, he was big on washing your hands. And you know what the biggest thing to prevent anything from spreading on board a ship or off a ship is? Washing your hands properly, often with plain old soap and water. Even better than just using those Purell and everything else. Soap and water, washing your hands often, especially on a cruise ship, but all the time, can keep you oftentimes from having these kinds of problems. Jonathan, you always put a nice tip on the story, and we appreciate it. I hope you have a great rest of the day.
Thank you, Paul. Take care.
Jonathan Savage, Fox News correspondent and WJR contributor extraordinaire, as the U.S. continues to monitor those passengers returning from that ship with the hantavirus outbreak. We continue in Focus on WJR. Well, it's a pleasure being here, live from Mathai Botanical Gardens and presented by the good folks of Destination Ann Arbor. As we continue during this travel and tourism week, really, our WJR annual Paul W. Smith Pure Michigan Tour, and enjoying our Washtenaw County broadcast and saying hi to a gentleman we spent time with before on the air, the executive chef, Jovan Wagner, who is with Echelon Kitchen and Bar here in Ann Arbor. Nice to see you.
Good to see you, Paul.
We need his mic on. Everything going well?
Everything's going great.
Excellent. Excellent. We're happy to hear that. Congratulations. I think this is since we've spoken. I'm not positive, but I do know that Echelon has been recognized as a James Beard Award semifinalist for Best New Restaurant.
Yeah, thank you so much.
It's got to make you feel good.
It's amazing.
Because there are a lot of good restaurants in Ann Arbor.
There sure are.
There really are. You know what I love about Ann Arbor is and I grew up in Monroe, Michigan, but coming to school in Ann Arbor was like going way far away from home. But even though you were a 40-minute, 45-minute drive away.
It's a very dynamic culinary scene that has had a really historical place in Michigan food.
It really does. And there, as I say, so many great restaurants. And congratulations on the James Beard Award. There's a new Huna
Bar.
Huna,
yeah.
Bar. What's the concept and what's the story on that?
So Huna is a tiki bar below Echelon, meant to be kind of like an escape from everyday life, from the cold winters, from the hustle and bustle. It's your own little paradise underneath the streets of Ann Arbor.
Wow, that sounds pretty good. How long has Huna Bar been open?
Huna Bar has only been open a couple months.
So this is a nice find that we're telling people about. They may not know about it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're brand new. I think the word is starting to get out, and it's been a really exciting time for us.
What's the location? Right in the basement, if you will. Wait, we probably don't say basement anymore. I learned this a long time ago. We say lower level.
It's in the basement.
Oh,
sure.
Good. Good for you. God bless you, Joe. So what's the address there? What's the location?
200 South Main Street, and the access, if you will, to it is actually on Washington Street. We're on the corner of Washington and Maine, and there is a big blue flashing arrow pointing to the door.
Well, that's useful. It's for people like me who get lost very easily. But my daughter Sophie, who is a proud graduate of U of M also, and she's now working in New York, which I tried to talk her out of because I was sentenced to New York for 5 years. That's a long story. Another story, but she loved Echelon and told me about Echelon Kitchen and Bar in Ann Arbor. Now, new restaurants are adding to the visitor experience in Ann Arbor seemingly all the time.
Yeah, it's really special time right now in Ann Arbor. I think more so than ever, from my experience, the food scene in Ann Arbor is so dynamic. There's so much to offer. You can have every type of culinary experience in Ann Arbor, and you're also not paying the big city price for that. You're getting the Midwest hospitality, and you're still getting Michelin and James Beard quality culinary experiences.
You're getting great people, which is very important to the dining experience, with great service.
Absolutely.
The food
is amazing.
We're speaking to the chef, for goodness sakes, the executive chef, Joe Van Wagner. So you know he feels that way and works hard for it. The presentation of the food, the ambiance, it's a great vibe, which Ann Arbor itself has a great vibe.
100%. I mean, I think what we do so well in Ann Arbor now is the intentionality behind the whole experience. We want you to come into our town, into our restaurants, and we want to take great care of you.
Well, and you do, from everything I'm hearing. I want to ask you, as an executive chef, all of us have a way, well, maybe not all of us, but a lot of us have a way that we decide if a restaurant is good. For me, at a hotel restaurant, it's a club sandwich. I always think if they can get the club sandwich right, they can probably do other things. Do you have any feelings like that when you go to a restaurant? Do you test other restaurants as an executive chef?
Sure, absolutely. The most basic one is seasoning. Is the dish salted properly? Does it have the right amount of acid? But one thing for me is if I go to a restaurant and you can cook an over-medium egg, then I know you're pretty good.
Cook an over-medium egg. So yeah. That you still have the runny yolk?
So you still have a runny yolk, but all the white is cooked. And you can't have any brown crispy edges either. That means you were careless with the heat.
Well, this is, you're very specific, but you're an executive chef. I'm an executive eater. I also text the average restaurant with how well they do with a cheeseburger.
That's a great barometer right there. How good is your cheeseburger cookery?
Yeah, because if you say medium rare and it comes well done, you go, I'm glad I didn't order a steak.
Right.
Because that's a big expensive investment. But if they can get a cheeseburger right, and you know, Executive Chef Joe Van Wagner, a very important note you said, if they get the salt right, you know, I don't really want to taste salt in my food. I shouldn't, should I?
No, you want to taste the ingredients,
right,
that are thus enhanced by proper seasoning.
I always say when I order something, I don't want any sauce on that, especially if it's a piece of meat or whatever. Put the sauce on the side. I want to taste the quality of the meat, the main dish, not the quality of a sauce that basically is put over the meat or whatever the main dish is to change the flavor.
Those are the words of an experienced eater, of an executive eater.
You can look at me and say, Paul is clearly an executive eater. Well, I am, and I love it. Now, you've got rotating seasonal ingredients there in the restaurant at Echelon.
And how could we not? We're in Ann Arbor,
right?
Especially this time of year. We try to change the menu several times a week based on what is available to us by the farm.
Several times a week.
We are going to be starting a new menu initiative, if you will, coming up here soon, where we do a farmer's market menu on Wednesdays
that will
be completely inspired by what we find in the market that day.
Excellent. House cocktails, curated wines, some pretty unexpected pairings, I bet.
We have the best beverage team from Taylor Arsam and Max, our bar director. And they, too, really embrace the philosophy of Michigan first and then using ingredients and sources that come from Michigan, which is really exciting.
I got to tell you what I have heard, Joe, and love. And this is going to sound funny, but you know what I'm talking about if you go out to eat a lot, and I do. The people working there, the servers, etc., they know the menu.
Absolutely.
Doesn't that sound ridiculous? But that's how many times have you gone in to buy a new car and you say, does this have a gefilte fork? And they go, I don't know. I'll have to check. Wait a minute. You're selling this thing. You should know. Same thing with the person in the restaurant.
Absolutely. Every single person that works on the floor knows the entire menu front to back. If they're running food, if they're bussing tables, if chefs are running food to the table, we have to know every single ingredient. We have to be the experts of our own craft. It's what we're selling.
Keep up the good work. As a James Beard Award semifinalist for Best New Restaurant, the executive chef, Joe Van Wagner. It's Echelon Kitchen and Bar, of course, right here in Ann Arbor. 200 South Main Street. And they've got that new Huna bar, and is that the entrance on Washington?
That's correct.
All right, so, and there's a big arrow, so I can't miss it.
Can't miss it. We'll see you there, Paul.
All right, we will look forward to that, Executive Chef Joe Van Wagner. And just another great reason to choose Ann Arbor and why we're so pleased to be here, presented by Destination Ann Arbor. We continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith on the road on WJR. I'm just going to say, I don't know if it's the seasonal allergies or if it's because I'm at a botanical garden. I don't know, but it's beautiful and it's worth being here, allergies or not. And we thank Chad Wiebesick of Destination Ann Arbor, and you can find all you need to know at annarbor.org, because there is so much that's going on here, from the great restaurants to the great grounds and parks and the Arb, and I mean, the list goes on and on. Ann Arbor is so special and so close, yet once you're here, you feel like you're a million miles away. So it is a beautiful destination. Pistons tonight, 7 o'clock. Here we go, Mr. Parsons. In fact, the team, Mike Parsons, Daniel Mason, Rich Luzinski, earlier Rene Vitale, Ava DiMaggio keeping track of the purse strings, Ray Templin running the controls here in Ann Arbor, as we are here from the Mathai Botanical Gardens, presented by Destination Ann Arbor. Pistons on Amazon Prime again. That just doesn't make... Well, it doesn't matter if I think it makes sense or not. It's the way it is.
Right.
You know, I have Amazon Prime because I happen to be a shopaholic, but not everyone is. And it's just kind of sad what's happened to the world of sports, and for that matter, television, and the fact that you have to spend... Somebody said to me earlier, I don't know if this was on the air or not, it's like $106 to watch the Pistons through the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once upon a time, cord cutting was worth it, but now everything is so spread out and fragmented that you might as well just pay for cable. But now the games aren't even on cable anymore.
No, they're not even just on cable like that. That's just, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And, you know, Paul, we've been talking about this. I think eventually the sports leagues are going to suffer because you want to make your product as accessible to as many people as possible, and the only people this allegedly benefits are the streamers in the short term. I think eventually people are just going to start saying, the heck with it, we've got other options, and you know, we'll watch it when it's on a streaming service we have or when it's on an actual TV station. If not, then we'll just do without.
I think you're right. And, you know, I think, frankly, honestly, the owners, when we keep saying, well, wow, how can they afford to pay that kind of salary to that player? Well, this is how.
Right.
They say, well, we're just going to make it up on the television rights and sell them to, like, everybody and their brother.
Yeah.
Which is the only way I can think of how they got to Amazon Prime in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember the specifics, but I know that there have been big bidding wars between all these streamers, because these streamers know that sports, you know, are big business and it's a way to grow your platform. But I just think during the playoffs, it shouldn't be this hard to hunt around for your team. I mean, regular season, fine, but
yeah. Hey, I mentioned this at the beginning. I'll say it again. Now that we're in our regular time period, and thanks to Kevin Dietz for donating his 1 hour as we're on the road for the Pure Michigan Tour, the Ford Fireworks kicking off summer in Detroit on Monday, June 22nd. The Parade Company and the Ford Motor Company partnership brings Detroit one of America's most stunning fireworks shows. And Tony Michaels, the Wizard of Ooze and Oz, has proclaimed that the theme is Detroit, go for launch. So that's going to be on the Detroit River Monday, June 22nd, 10 p.m. We will have a special broadcast from 7 to 9 p.m. on WJR on that June 22nd date. So we're looking forward to that for sure. Did you hear, this sounds like I'm making up a story, did you hear about the man who caught the massive fish?
No, no, I did it. Yeah, right. It sounds like the setup of a punchline.
It does. And it's not a punchline as far as I know, but a Michigan man broke a state record by catching a massive fish. Cedric Nienhuis, an angler from Lowell, was spin casting on the Grand River in Kent County April 22nd, according to the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. He caught a record-breaking gizzard shad. I'm not that familiar with a gizzard shad, and I don't think I want to be familiar with a fish named a gizzard shad.
Yeah, I'm Googling it, and, well, how big was this gizzard shad?
4.45 pounds, measuring 20.3 inches in length. It's a big, ugly fish that he's holding on to, and very proudly got a big smile on his face. Huh. And the previous state record gizzard shad was caught a long time, 1996, when I came back home to WJR. That's wow. How long ago this was, 1996, over 30 years, on Lake St. Clair. And it was 4.12 pounds and 21 inches long.
Wow. So, okay, so it's not a record for fish overall. It's a record for a gizzard shad. Yeah.
Which are native to Michigan and are named for the muscular organ filled with grit and stones that helps the fish break down food. This is apparently why I don't see, I have never seen gizzard shad on a menu.
You know, Paul.
How's the gizzard shad?
Gritty. You know, Paul.
If you can get by the stones and grit. Yeah,
I never thought we'd see that gizzard shad broken. There's some sports records that you just don't expect to see go down. And I did not think we'd see a gizzard
never
shad.
Never thought you'd see the gizzard shad record broken. That's a very good observation. All right, we had a couple other things in the news we should address. What do we have here? Well, let me see what this one is. The school phone bans have little impact on academics or behavior, according to a new study. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's pretty surprising. We thought that, you know, maybe not behavior, but you'd have thought academics would have taken a step up just because you're doing away with distractions. But maybe kids are just good at hiding their distractions.
I have never been for banning phones from schools. I have been for teachers enforcing the rule that you can't use the phone in the classroom. So then it's a lot more work for the teacher. But then the students realize there's a reason for rules and they must follow them.
Right.
Otherwise, there's disciplinary action. This way, phones are banned. Well, nobody has to work. It's like the old and foolish zero tolerance,
right,
which means zero thinking necessary.
Or just better hiding from the people who are trying to get away with it.
Yeah. I'll say it again. Poor Marco Rubio, given the task of flying to Rome in the Vatican and meeting with Pope Leo to try to smooth things over. And while he's on the way there, the president is still throwing mud and dirt at the Pope. You're not going to win in a battle of words with the Pope. You just aren't.
Right.
And you shouldn't try.
Yeah.
Just like he shouldn't have tried with the Gold Star family in his first go around. There's a time when you just take the high road and you don't get involved in these kinds of arguments. And by the way, neither should the Pope. He's infallible with information about the church and the Bible and all of that, not in fighting the political battles of a president that he clearly doesn't like.
Maybe that'll be the UFC fight on the White House lawn this year. Pope versus Donald Trump.
What do you think of the apparent Epstein suicide note, which isn't explained enough? It isn't the last time when he actually died. It's apparently a time before that, which I didn't remember because I don't care too much, that he tried to commit suicide once before. Did you know that?
Oh, no, I didn't. So it wasn't from when he actually killed himself.
No, it's not from when he was found dead in a cell. It's from a time before that I don't even remember.
You know, him and Donald Trump have very similar writing styles. I mean, if you were just reading that in a vacuum, it almost sounded like a true social post from the president. Very weird.
Well, I had not even thought of that, but that's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
And I always appreciate it when you think.
Thank you. Yeah, it happens so rarely.
No, it doesn't, but it's nice when you share your thoughts like that. All right, we've got lots more to share here. We've got two more hours of this fabulous tour. We're here, presented by Destination Ann Arbor. Go to AnnArbor.org for Destination Ann Arbor. And Chad Wiebesick, thank you. We'll meet with Chad on the air here near the end of the program. More interesting people, too, to meet along the way. Coming up next as we continue in Focus and our WJR Paul W. Smith Pure Michigan Tour. Stay with us. As we continue on our tour, we say hi to Dave Seacott. He's the marketing and events man at the Michigan Brewers Guild, and we're here to tell you about something very exciting coming up June 13th from 1 till 6 p.m. It's the Michigan Summer Beer Festival in Ypsilanti. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
That sounds like a lot of fun, and I'm told it's the largest Michigan-only beer festival in the state.
Indeed. Indeed it is.
Now, I've told this story a million times. We're driving up north, and I would see a field, and I'd see, plants or whatever, and I'd go, oh, must be vineyards, must be grapes. And I'll never forget the first time I went by, and it said hops. I went, hops? What the heck? I got to say, it seems to me, Dave, and you're the guy to ask, did the beer business, I have not a better way to put it, but did the beer business explode faster in Michigan by far than the wine business took to get so big?
I don't know the answer to that. What I can tell you...
Make one up because nobody does.
Well,
here.
I'll give you at least some insight into where we've gone over the past 15 years.
Okay.
So we go back...
Has it been 15 years?
Since like the boom, yeah, for
sure.
So 15 years, we go back, Michigan had registered 112 breweries in the state. Fast forward to 2025, because that's the numbers that we have currently.
Right.
420 breweries, right? So we go from 112 in 15 years to 420 breweries. So the need for something like that, the hop farms here in the state of Michigan, was necessary.
Yeah, and it's still going strong. There's no sign of it backing off or anything.
No.
There's a lot. My friend Dean Champagne, I don't have it. I meant to bring it. I'll talk about it maybe tomorrow. Has a new book out. And it's all about alcohol-free drinks. Is that affecting our ability to sell some of these great craft Michigan beers?
Well, the good thing is that there are Michigan breweries who do produce non-alcoholic beverages. Ah. There are plenty of breweries who are outside of the state that do that as well.
Okay.
However, there was just legislation that was passed here in the state that allows brew pubs and breweries to purchase non-alcoholic beer. Now, that wasn't a thing until, I want to say, like 2 months ago.
Oh, really?
So in order to fulfill the need for customers who are not drinking alcohol, now breweries are able to bring in outside non-alcoholic beverages. That way they can serve those people who don't necessarily drink alcohol or are participating in, let's say, Dry January or something like that.
Yeah.
So there is the ability for breweries to make some sort of move in the needle. Based on the need for non-alcoholic beverages.
The Summer Beer Festival truly hosts many of Michigan's finest breweries, and you'll get a chance to sample hundreds of fresh, local Michigan beers. And it's really a great event celebrating Michigan's beer. If you're over 21, obviously, you are warmly welcomed. Food is available for purchase from local food vendors inside the festival. It'll be some live music, some great things. It's all coming up Saturday, June 13th. 1 to 6 p.m. admission is $60 in advance, $70 day of the gate. Early entry, noon to 6, VIP tickets available for $80 in advance, $90 day at the gate. And it sounds like a great event, and it apparently draws visitors to Ypsilanti and Washtenaw County from all over the place.
All over. I was just looking at the map yesterday for ticket sales from last. We have people coming in from Chicago. We have people coming from South Bend. Of course, our neighbors in Ohio come up here. I believe the furthest that I saw was Louisville.
Wow.
So there are people who come up here who are big beer fans around here. Michigan is known as the great beer state. We coined that term for a reason because we have phenomenal beer. So
is there a list of the beers available online or somehow?
It will be coming out very soon. We are finalizing. I was just looking at it before I came here, just doing some edits. So once that gets finalized, that will be published live, both on the website, and then we'll also post it to our social accounts.
You know, and since everybody else knows this and can find it, I still ask the question, what is the website?
MIBeer.com.
MIBeer.com. M-I, Michigan. MIBeer.com. You know what I like about this very much, Dave Seacott? That you have designated driver tickets.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant, and I don't know if every alcoholic festival does that, but you do. Tell me about that.
It's important to make sure that, again, and it's not just because it's a requirement for us to tell people to drink responsibly. It's important. It's important to us that we can actually offer that to make sure people are getting home safely, that they have a ride. And for us, you know, the ticket is $25 for the designated driver ticket. You also get entertainment. You can go shop at the new Maker's Market. You can watch the wrestling shows. You can watch live music. You can, again, have fun with your friends, get some great food from local vendors. So it's not... It's not just, you know, $25 that's just wasted because you're there.
Right. It's not a boring thing. No. You're going to have as much fun, and you're going to live with yourself for helping your friends get home alive.
Yeah.
So it's fabulous. Now, I understand this is one of their cashless events.
Yeah. So we started to move towards being cashless. It just made it a little bit easier for us to manage on our side, you know, volunteers and stuff like that. You know, we don't have to, you know, make them, you know, make change. We don't have to have them handle money. It's much quicker when it comes to our merch tents. You know, back in the day, it was we did this because we would sell extra tokens. We don't have to do that anymore, right? So it's mainly just for our merch tent, to be honest.
And you do need to show some ID. Unlike the people who are still fighting for us to have to show ID to vote, you need ID to go to a beer festival.
Yes, sir.
But in this case, to prove that you're 21 or older.
That's correct.
And it's outside.
Yes, sir.
And it's win, lose, or draw with the weather, because we're in Michigan.
Uh-huh.
So rain or shine, it's going to happen, and the tickets, from what I understand, are non-refundable.
That's correct.
And so they should go to MIBeer.com
for
more information. And soon they'll have a list of the beers that will be available. But, you know, what the heck? They're going to be so many. You know you're going to love them. And we love you, Dave Seacott, for putting this whole thing together at the Michigan Brewers Guild. And for us to be able to tell our listeners about it.
Thank you very much.
Have fun.
Hey, we will.
You know what? I know you will.
You should come.
I should come. You never know. I show up places oftentimes when I have no idea where I am. So this could happen. Ava, did you sell this? Are we selling this so I show up? I don't know. We'll find out as we continue in Focus Pure Michigan on WJR. Well, there is lots of other news, and of course, even while we're on this annual tour, we're covering some of that other news. And a lot of people are talking about the, well, I guess we have to say alleged suicide note from Epstein, the slug. And also, there's still conversation about people who knew him, met him, or whatever. Howard Lutnick currently in the hot seat with... having to defend why he ever spent any time. I mean, look, all the rich guys hang out together, and Epstein was a snake who tried to win over every rich guy he could for his own benefit. It seemed to work pretty well. No one else can tell me how he got so rich other than using all these rich guys that he endeared himself to. It doesn't mean because you were with Epstein that you even knew what he was doing, let alone condone it or participated in that. Bill Ballinger is the editor of the Ballinger Report, and I think I can safely say both Bill and I have never met Mr. Epstein. At least I can say that because I believe that to be true. Bill.
Same with me. I swear it.
Yeah, I didn't think so. And just because you meet him doesn't really end up meaning anything, or you end up with a picture. Look, you and I have had our picture taken with people that we don't know at all. It happens all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, the problem for Lutnick is that he claimed at one point that he cut off all ties with Epstein way back in 2005. We're talking 21 years ago.
Right.
And then it turns out he actually, more than just met him, he actually took his wife and his family to Epstein's Island in 2012. Now, that's 14 years ago, so that's a long ways away. And he exchanged emails, and he had one other meeting with him. So it turns out that he didn't cut off all ties with Epstein 21 years ago, as he claimed. So that is one of the big disputes right now.
You wouldn't expect a man to take his wife and children to be involved in any kind of nefarious activity.
Absolutely. And, of course, let me claim that he knew nothing, as you have just alluded to, with respect to other people. He knew nothing about Epstein's involvement with trafficking underage girls. He didn't know anything about that. And nobody's asserted that Lutnick lied about that, and he did know about it. So, I mean, even if he met and consorted with Epstein these three times since 2005, there's no evidence that, you know, this meant that somehow Lutnick was connected to Epstein's nefarious activities.
Right. Do you believe, I guess I can ask you this, Bill. Do you believe Epstein killed himself?
Absent absolute evidence to the contrary, I think he did. And maybe that gets to the suicide note or alleged suicide note that has been found and released. We don't know for sure what happened. There's still going to be, you know, huge controversy and uncertainty about this probably for years to come, just like the Kennedy assassination.
My gosh, you're
right. People are not convinced today that Lee Harvey Oswald killed John Kennedy. So Epstein and suicide, or whether he was murdered, that's always going to be a big point of dispute.
You know, what has not been made clear enough to the average person who isn't trying to live on every note, because I don't, about Epstein, I really don't, but to find out, because this isn't that clear to people, this is not a suicide note that was claimed to have been found after he was successfully supposedly killed himself. This is from a suicide attempt before that supposed suicide attempt that I don't remember even hearing about.
Yeah, no, I hadn't heard that either. So that was interesting to me that he attempted apparently to commit suicide, and the note was found by his cellmate supposedly in a book of some sort after that unsuccessful suicide attempt, before the ultimate death of Epstein, whether it was by suicide or otherwise.
And which would lead us, as you and I would know, Bill Ballinger, editor of the Ballinger Report, you and I have been around a while. If somebody tries to commit suicide, which he apparently, they say, did earlier, they're put on a endless suicide watch. And why didn't that happen?
Good question. You know, it's kind of confounding, it seems to me. If it was known that he tried to commit suicide, the prison officials certainly should have put him on a suicide watch. And why that didn't happen, that's one of the big mysteries surrounding his death. And that, you know, fans the flames of suspicion that it wasn't a suicide. It was a hit job. It was a murder.
Well, there are plenty of people with lots of power that really wish he would have gone away. And die before they got implicated, not thinking that all the emails and all the everything else that they've now released, it was implicating people anyway. But there was plenty of reason for him to be dead just because of the slug that he turned out to be. Very very quickly, and I don't think we gave you a heads up that we were going to talk about this, but I've got to ask you, does anyone have a harder job than Marco Rubio flying into the Vatican to tell the Pope there really isn't a problem while the president continues to slam the Pope? I mean, is there a harder job in America right now?
That's about as tough as it gets. Well, Rubio has one thing going for him, and that is he's a Roman Catholic. So at least a Roman Catholic was sent to speak to another Roman Catholic. But, Rubio's really walking a fine line on this one.
Yeah, he has to be, you know, everybody who works for the president has to be very careful. They have to be very careful. And they certainly can't control, they should not be held responsible or accountable for what the boss says, but let's face it, we all are, frankly.
Yeah, well, I will be very interesting if what comes out of the meeting of Rubio and the Pope, I can't imagine there's going to be a videotape or a transcript or whatever else. If there is, that would be great. What did they actually talk about? How did Rubio handle it? I mean, wouldn't you like to be a fly on a wall for that one?
Yeah. Well, as you say, he's a Roman Catholic, and if he can do it secretly and quietly, I would imagine he's going to apologize for the mess that apparently has come up. And I hope it's going to be just fine all the way around. It was a very learned man high up in Washington who said to me many years ago, people can get upset if they want, I'm just telling you what this guy said to me. He said, you know, the only time President Donald Trump isn't shooting himself in the foot is when he's loading his gun.
That is pretty clever. I think that probably sums it up right there.
Sadly. I'm mostly supportive of him. I'm not supportive of everything, and I wish he would do certain things in a different way, but there you are. Anything else, Bill? How do people get the Ballinger Report?
I just go online. The Ballinger Report, all one word, no dots, no spaces, .com. And there's at least one article every week. It's free. There's no paywall. So check it out.
What are you, independently wealthy? How do you make a living?
Well, I'm not depending on this to make a living. Let's put it that way. I'm doing it out of the love of politics.
And you've been doing it for how long?
Well, I mean, I've been doing it in various ways, shapes, and forms for 3 decades. But the Ballinger Report is about 8 years old.
I gotcha. But I know you 3 decades, that's for sure, and we've always depended on you. Now editor of the very young BallingerReport.com. Use the whole thing, all run together, the Ballinger Report, no spaces, no dots, .com, and you can see what Bill Ballinger, the editor, has to say, and we always enjoy hearing from him. Thank you, William.
My pleasure, Paul W., anytime.
All right. We continue in Focus on the road again, and happily so, as we are at Destination Ann Arbor, broadcasting from the Mathai Botanical Gardens on Dixboro Road in Ann Arbor. And AnnArbor.org is Destination Ann Arbor, and Chan Wiebesick is the great guy behind that. We'll be talking with him coming up in just a moment as we continue at 12:44. Well, Secretary of State, we've been talking about this, Marco Rubio, has now, in fact, met with Pope Leo, who this Friday, it's his one-year anniversary, believe it or not, already this Friday. So they met at the Vatican. From what I understand, they had more than 2 hours of closed-door talks amid the obvious strained relations between Washington and the Holy See. If anybody has some inside insight, it's WJR's Marie Osborne. With a look at how that meeting unfolded, what do we know, Marie? Good afternoon.
Well, we know very little because, of course, they don't have a press conference afterwards to talk about it, but we can glean some information. So the meeting today was considered an effort to smooth the tensions between the White House and the Vatican. In the past, on a number of occasions, the president has criticized the American board and Pope Leo for his comments on the war in Iran, like this.
Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. And he seemed to be saying that they can. And I say they cannot.
The Pope, rejecting accusations that he supports Iran's nuclear ambitions, continues to call for diplomacy and an end to the violence. Here's a quote. The church has for years spoken out against all nuclear weapons, so there's no doubt about that. If anyone wishes to criticize me for proclaiming the gospel, let them do so with truth. Now, as for the talks today, the State Department, a spokesman, says that the two sides discussed the ongoing crisis in the Middle East, along with issues across the Western Hemisphere, emphasizing a shared commitment to peace and human dignity. Rubio, of course, is a practicing Catholic. He downplayed the friction, saying the trip had long been planned, and noted that there's a lot of talk about including humanitarian aid and religious freedom in all this. Vatican officials had signaled the discussions would be frank. And Paul Rubio is scheduled also to meet with the Italian Prime Minister today, Giorgia Meloni, as the administration looks for support from European allies in the effort in Iran.
You don't need to take a stand. I'm a talk show host. I'm an opinion caster. You're more like a newscaster, so I understand that, and I respect that about you, Maria, as our Director of Community Affairs and News. I think they're both wrong. I don't think the Pope should be involved in this mess, nor do I believe the President should be taking on the Pope. I think it's a lose-lose proposition for both of them. Now, it leads to us saying, well, geez, did the Pope ever speak out about Iran killing thousands of their own people? Because, that if he didn't, that's kind of a miss there to now jump in and suggest that the United States should not be at war with them. And it leaves the president to saying what he says. Oh, apparently he thinks Iran should have nuclear weapons, blah, 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 blah. I wish they were both above this. That's what I wish. It doesn't do anyone any good. I don't know that anyone wins in this kind of a ridiculous battle. I can't imagine. Can you imagine a worse job or a tougher job than the one Marco Rubio just went through and faced flying over here? While he's flying over here to the Vatican, the president just keeps continuing attacking the Pope. And now he's supposed to walk in and say, well, we don't really have a problem. Everything's okay. It's a misunderstanding. We'll be all right. Can you imagine, Marie?
Oh, I know. It's got to be really tough. You know, the problem here is that there's a lot of history. And there's, as you say, there's both sides to the story. Certainly, I happen to have done a paper on this when I was in college.
Are you kidding?
No, on this part of this story. And that is that during World War II, the Vatican was highly criticized and is criticized to this day by historians for not speaking out against the atrocities that were happening to the Jews, right?
Right.
And you know, there's some validity to that. You got to wonder, why didn't the Vatican step forward and say that this was wrong? So the church has a long history of, I guess picking and choosing battles, but, you know, also speaking out in the face of what it sees as something wrong in society. So, and as you've said so many times yourself, President Trump cannot help himself. He cannot help him. There's no off switch. There's not even a dial down often. So that's part of the problem,
you wouldn't think you would have to say to the president or anyone in these kinds of positions, and there aren't any, there's one pope and one president, but that there are certain times you don't go after certain people. I go back to the Gold Star family in his first time. That was just such a sad and wrong move on his part. And I would have said the same thing. No, Mr. President, you do not want to go after the Pope. You just don't. Let the Pope do what the Pope does, and you do what you do, and don't get personally involved because you think the Pope is saying bad things about you or your leadership. Just let it go. And you're right, he can't help himself.
I don't think he has a let it go button. There's no let it, really.
You're absolutely right. There is no let it go button in the Oval Office. I've been in that Oval Office, but I was also there before there was a Diet Coke button. So, you know, who knows what's in there now? But there is, you're right, there is certainly no let it go button. That is a quote that should go down in history The president does not have a let it go button.
Yeah, he just and I'm with you. I think he just, you know, could have reiterated why he felt this was necessary and, you know, made that point, but don't need to go after somebody in particular.
No, and frankly, I don't think the Pope should be playing in this playground either. I think the Pope needs to be above all of that as well, and certainly say Iran should not have killed thousands of their people. Iran should not have a nuclear weapon. But if there's a way we can come to this without more people dying and being at war, then that's also the road we should look at. And I pray to God that that's what can happen. I don't know. I'm not like writing for the Pope now, and I'm certainly not. I was an altar boy, but I'm still not writing for the Pope, and I'm not writing for the president either. Marie, you always do a great job. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Paul.
Marie Osborne, WJR's Director of Community Affairs and News. And sometimes she just has to put up with me. I guarantee you she's a far better Catholic than I am. We've got another hour to go here in Focus on the Road again. Pure Michigan, WJR. And we thank AnnArbor.org and Ann Arbor, Destination Ann Arbor. Man, that's good any time of the year. We love Ann Arbor. And we love Chad Wiebesick, who is in charge of Destination Ann Arbor. And lots more to talk about here, as they are the presenter of this Thursday, May 7th broadcast from the Mathai Botanical Garden. You can stream us live. You can podcast us later, which I hope you'll do. It matters. And you can do all that at WJR.com. I hope you use a free WJR app as well. And we'll give you the Relentless Positive Radio. And I say we, I mean the team, the team, the team. Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason, Queen of the Switches, Rich Luzinski, and Renee Vitale, who started us off this extra hour today. Ray Templin running the controls here in Ann Arbor. Ava DeMangia controlling the purse strings, making sure the bills are paid. And we're all here having a wonderful time in our, what number annual tour is this? 23, yeah, I think it's been more than that, but we're going with 23 because I think she did research on that. Anyway, Pistons tonight, 7 o'clock. I sure hope you have Amazon Prime, and I'm not proud that they've come up with 47 different ways to have to spend money to watch the Pistons. Somebody told me just for the playoffs, if you were starting from scratch, it's like $106 to buy all the things you need to have to watch these games. Can I use the word criminal? That's criminal, my friends. Now, that's not great.
No, I'm not a fan of it either, as most people can probably tell. I believe after tonight, the rest of the series is on NBC. So,
what a novel idea.
a place that anyone can watch it.
Yeah, well, these days, anyone can watch it if you have a cable or rabbit ears.
Right.
As you're on your way to making each and every day count, because you know each day is a gift, we're with you on that. We just need to be reminded from time to time. And as Kim would say, QTR, none of us know how much quality time remaining QTR we have. So live your life the way you've always wanted to live it. Never too late. If you say this isn't the life I expected I was going to have, then change it now. And I do thank you for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. And that happens not just when you listen to us, but when you listen to this great radio station, WJR, 102 great years. All right, we've been talking about the tough job that Marco Rubio has. Good little Catholic kid facing the Pope and trying to smooth things over while the president continues to criticize the Pope, while he's on his way over there, and then while he is there, he spent his time with the Pope. We have no reports on how it went. The Pope's one-year anniversary is Friday,
right,
by the way.
We were on this very tour when he was named Pope. Remember that?
I remember, because we were watching the smoke come out of the chimney. Yeah. Which led us all to have a cigar to celebrate Pope Leo's fine... Well, any excuse, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Right.
But how about this one? I feel sorry. I do take sides, but I feel sorry for the bank employee who's getting all this attention now for hanging up on the Pope. Did you hear this story?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Think of this. This bank employee thought it was a prank call. And for those of us who get lots of calls, we get lots of prank calls. So the Pope calls up his bank and he wants to change his account from the Chicago bank, because he's a Chicagoan, to the Vatican bank or a bank in the Vatican. And he identified himself on the call by his birth name of Robert.
Okay.
And tried to change his on-file address and phone number with his Chicago bank. I guess that's what he was doing. So the bank teller asked for the bank account number, to which the Pope gave his Social Security number. And he answered all the security questions properly. So then, for whatever reason, the teller says, "I'm sorry, sir. You need to come to the bank in person to finalize this process."
In Chicago.
Yes. And he says, "Well, I'm actually in Italy. Would it change anything if I told you I was the Pope?"
Okay.
And her answer to "would it change anything if I told you I was the Pope?" her answer was to hang up on him.
You know,
you can't blame her.
No, especially if you're in Chicago. I mean, you probably think it's a prank phone call.
Of course. I mean, you would also think, for God's sake, and I use God here on purpose, for God's sake, don't you think the Pope would have people to handle this for him?
Yeah, I mean...
You don't expect to get a phone call. It's like calling and saying, "Hi, I have to update my driver's license. Can I make a point at the Department of Motor Vehicles?" I mean, come on.
You know,
he's the Pope.
You know, the big question, Paul, do you think he's going to get Pope Leo on all his new checks?
I don't... That's a very good question. I can tell you this. God forbid I ever become Pope, but if I did, I'd play it up everywhere I could.
Right.
You bet my check would say Pope Paul W.
I'm not waiting in line at Chili's if I'm the Pope. I'm going to the front of the line.
How does he call and make reservations? Does he call Chili's and say, "A party of 62, could you put that under the Pope?"
I got to tell you, Paul, if the Pope called me with his real name, I wouldn't know it off the top of my head.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah, because he's just Pope. I know he's Pope Leo, but other than that. And look, I guess a bank's rules, Maybe he can hop on a flight from the Vatican to Chicago and get this deal done. I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm surprised that no airline has jumped on board with this and offered him free airfare.
Yeah. Well, I think he had tickets on...
I think it'd be a great marketing thing to do.
I think he had tickets on Spirit, but that flight didn't happen. So maybe that's part of the issue.
Now he's really in big trouble.
Yeah.
All right. So, and Pope Leo's brother, I don't know why this is in the same packet of information, but Pope Leo's older brother, Louis, has been praised by President Trump for being all MAGA.
Okay.
I didn't know what the story was till I was reading it just now. He has praised the Pope's brother as being all MAGA in contrast to the pontiff.
You think Donald Trump is trying to make the Pope's brother the good brother? Imagine making that case. Your brother's the Pope and someone's trying to make you the good brother.
Your brother may be the Pope, but you're the good guy.
Right. Pope Leo, why can't you be more like your brother? I'm sure the president is saying.
You know, if we tried to make this stuff up and push it off as a humorous take on everything, no one would believe us.
It sounds like The Onion more so than the actual news.
Yeah, The Onion that does all that fabulous
the
satire writing.
Yeah, satire.
All right, we are into hour number two, our final hour here in beautiful Ann Arbor. Go to annarbor.org, destination Ann Arbor. So many great things to do in this area. And our next guest really knows that because she's the board chair of the Washtenaw County Commissioners. We're going to say hello to Commissioner Katie Scott in just a moment. She got all excited and almost jumped on the air just now. No, that's the buildup. As we continue in focus on WJR. As we continue enjoying very much our live broadcast from Mathai Botanical Gardens, presented by Destination Ann Arbor. Go to annarbor.org, get more information on this fabulous area in all of Washtenaw County. Is just I say this because I remember my days as a student at U of M and all of our children and all of that. We did not know, however, the board chair of the Washtenaw County Commissioners until right now. And that is Katie Scott, who also is a Washtenaw County Commissioner for District 9, and she is here.
I am. Thanks for having me.
You had a board meeting yesterday, and you lived to tell about it.
We had a board meeting yesterday. We started at 5:30. We ended about 10 o'clock last night, which was a record.
And I'm told that that's pretty good.
Yeah, it was an early night.
5:30 to 10 o'clock. I don't know. Bless you. I don't know how you do it. You don't have to answer that. These days, being a board chair for a commissioner, a county commission of any county in the country is so challenging.
It is challenging, and I'll take all the blessings I can get.
Good for you.
Thanks.
Well, I'm blessing you right now.
Thank you.
You know, a lot of people might not know this, but Washtenaw County is celebrating 200 years.
200 years. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, officially as an incorporated county, 200 years. Obviously, things happening here before that, but I love a good bicentennial.
Well, who doesn't love a good bicentennial? And why don't you give us, as best you can, well, first of all, where should people go to get more information on the bicentennial activities?
We have a website, so they can Google Washtenaw County Bicentennial, and the website comes right up with all of the things happening.
And Google, God bless Google. Why didn't you or I come up with that idea?
I don't know.
Anyway, so just Google Washtenaw County Bicentennial, but give us some of the activities maybe that you can that stick out or
sure.
that you want us to know about.
We started with a great event for the first ever State of the County for Washtenaw. It was a fantastic event. Came in and looked at our theme, which is past, present, and possible, and so really went over the government functions and what we're doing in Washtenaw County to make things better. Coming up soon, we have Art in the Park. So it's a series of interactive trails with our park system with art exhibitions that are there. And one of those will be at Gallup Park, which will be a mural about the bicentennial prepared by our bicentennial fellow, Irene Mora. And we have some upcoming tours about the role of the Underground Railroad in Washtenaw County, which was huge in the Underground Railroad.
A story that should be told.
Yes, absolutely. So there's one coming up on May 30th. It's a bus tour. Soon after that, in June, we'll focus on Black Civil War veterans. In July, we have a rodeo that will be at the Farm Council grounds. That will celebrate our agricultural and rural heritage because most people don't know that Washtenaw County, I think from 2017 to 2026, I could be getting those dates a little wrong, but we are the only county where agriculture grew in Michigan. So we do have a strong rural tradition as well.
I, first of all, Commissioner Scott, want to congratulate you on knowing all this stuff off the top of your head.
Thank you.
No notes here. You're doing this off the top of your head, and I'm already confused. But excellent job. So I just want to get a clarification. Is the Art in the Park the same thing as the Summer Art Walk?
That's the Summer Art Walk, yes.
Oh, that is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
Probably that was the correct name. And I'm thinking of it as Art in the Park.
No, I think both names work beautifully,
yeah.
But if people want to look it up, they might be looking at Summer Art Walk. But whatever it is, I just love the fact that you don't have to remember a specific place. You just go Google it.
Google
is the answer pretty much to everything. You want folks to come here. You're proud to have them come here and experience the county.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, Washtenaw County is beautiful because you have these centers like Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti, some of our other cities, and then you can drive very short distances and be in a rural area, in a forest area, in a meadow area. It's flat, it's hilly. It's an absolutely amazing place to be, and I'm proud of the work we're doing to preserve that character.
I love the idea. You broke it down this way, our past, our present, and our possible. Throw a little more meat on that for me.
About what's possible?
About all of those things.
About all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're a vegan, and I apologize.
I'm not.
Okay, so then throw a little meat on that. What's the most important thing of the past? What's the most important part of the present? And what are you looking toward to be our possible?
It's really hard to tell you what the most important part of the past is because that's super subjective.
Right.
When I think about thinking about what's possible, I'm thinking about how the county is really approaching things and trying to think about things from an equity lens and trying to think about how we go forward with that in mind, in a very specific mind. To that end, these events that we're having for the bicentennial are also free for everybody in Washtenaw County. We don't want anybody to have to be charged to go to these events. We want everybody to have access. We want everybody to celebrate Washtenaw County and what's possible.
So, but when you say that, you don't mean just residents of Washtenaw County. You mean everybody. If our listeners come up from Detroit or Monroe or Toledo or wherever they're coming from, they're okay, right? You're not going to stop them at the border and charge them.
No, I don't think anybody's going to be checking IDs.
This is, Ann Arbor is not the place where they're going to make you show ID.
No, we are not.
We already know that. It's a vibrant, diverse, dynamic community, and there's no question about that, and maybe one of the most in the great state of Michigan. And we don't have to get into politics.
I would argue that, though. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true.
I will brook no argument.
All right. and maybe just a reminder why the bicentennial matters so much, your 200th anniversary.
I mean, 200 is a milestone. And just to think about all of the things that have been happening here for 200 years, there have been some really important international, national things that have had a genesis in Washtenaw County. I mean, you could even go to thinking about public health things like Jonas Salk and the polio vaccine. You can think about John F. Kennedy talking about the Peace Corps on the steps of the Union. Things happen here in Washtenaw County. They've happened for 200 years, and I hope they're going to happen for many hundreds of years to come.
You want to know how old I am? I interviewed Jonas Salk.
Did you?
I really did.
Wow.
It's pretty astonishing when I think about that, but I interviewed Jonas Salk.
That's pretty cool.
But here's the other thing. You guys are having a bicentennial, a 200-year anniversary, way better than America's, because remember what we did? We all spent the night at the radio station thinking the world was going to come to an end at Y2K.
That's right.
The power grids are going to shut down. They're going to depend on WJR to get any information. We all spent the night at the radio station, and not a damn thing happened when Y2K happened.
My mom had food stockpiled.
I hope all of our moms did, or they probably did. Moms are like that. God bless them.
Yeah.
And with Mother's Day coming up, as I said before, I think the Methai Botanical Gardens little store out here is a wonderful place to come in and do a little quick shopping for mom. And a lot of things she's going to love. Books, too.
It's a really nice trip to come to your mom, too. Walk through the gardens.
Take her through.
Beautiful trails. It's gorgeous.
It is. You know what? We all should spend a little more time being thankful of all of the beauty we are surrounded by instead of paying attention to most of the news media that shows us negative and bad stuff all the time. Sorry, Ted, I know you just passed away and you can now hear me, but 24-hour news has not been a gift.
No, it's important to keep balance. Get out of nature. Go on the art walk.
They say it. The more time you spend out of doors, the healthier you are.
Yeah, I think there's actually studies that show that. Proximity to trees and plants, and this is the perfect time of year for it.
It is indeed, and we thank you for being here with us. I know how busy you are. Washtenaw County Commissioner, Board Chair, Katie Scott.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun.
Well, it was our pleasure, and it was fun for us as well. And we continue here on, even Amy Carbo came by to say hi to you. And we used to interview her husband about golf. See, all these things come full circle.
It's a small world.
As well, we should understand and realize that and all get along.
That's right.
Maybe I should run for president. No, I'm not going to do that.
It's a thankless job.
That is so true. Thank you, Board Chair, Washtenaw County Commissioner, and Commissioner of District 9, Katie Scott. We continue in focus on WJR. Why don't I hear any music still playing? They ran out of music? Oh, this is sounds like a personal problem. We are continuing here and having conversations. Sales boss extraordinaire, Jeff Marcero, just stopped by. So I'm just going to guess there's a golf course nearby here. Is that true?
There is.
It, see, there you are. There we go. God bless you, Jeff, for all the good work that you do. He's a fellow Monroe guy. Now, our next guest, and I don't mean to get ahead of ourselves, he did not. You and I went to Monroe Catholic Central. He, Chad, went to high school in South Korea. I don't know what else to say. I can't even ask questions or compare notes. I know Daron Levin did not go to high school in South Korea. Did you go to high school in Israel?
I went to high school in Mount Lebanon, Pennsylvania, just outside of Pittsburgh, and rooted for the Steelers and rooted for the Pirates.
Okay, just so it doesn't sound like I'm nuts, he was born in Israel. He was in the Israeli army, along with his beautiful wife. But I never heard about this other story, so we'll talk about it another time, Daron. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't just ask questions I already know the answer to, like lawyers.
Right.
I ask questions and sometimes step into it in my own way. Now,
not
so Axios,
you're doing great, Paul.
Daron, Axios is reporting Iran is considering the U.S. proposal to end the war. Can I ask you, as a far brighter guy and more worldly guy than me, can I ask you, what difference does it make whatever anyone says, including Iran, about what Iran will do or not do, since they have lied since they've existed?
Well, look, they don't want the United States to come down on them any harder than we've come down on them already. And they're very, very worried about their own people turning on them, which could happen at any moment, and probably we would like to happen at some point to stop the tyranny there and the torture and the summary executions and everything else they've been doing for the last half century. That's a danger too. But I think that the president has been pretty clear that Iran is not going to have a nuclear bomb, and we're going to do whatever we need to do as a country to make sure that they don't have a nuclear bomb. And if that means going in and faking out uranium that is there, we know it's there. If it means having Iranian agents on the ground do that for us, it doesn't matter. But the Iranian side obviously thinks that the president is going to fold because the election is getting close in November, and maybe they can wait it out, and maybe they can continue to stall and talk about 15-point proposals and whether they're going to accept the proposals and how many of them they're going to accept. But it's not really going to help them because they are cornered, and they've made some bad mistakes, and it just has to play out now. And I think everybody just has to be patient. I want to get back to $3 a gallon gas just like everybody else, but I don't want to see another North Korea, which is what Iran has become and would become with a nuclear weapon. So I think everybody has to just take a deep breath and let this play out.
Well, certainly the fact of the matter is, like it or not, they've talked themselves into this position. If the president does not get a promise or proposal that they may or may not live up to, and they generally don't, that takes out that uranium or any of their nuclear weaponry capability, we have lost. And this president doesn't like to lose, and he knows pretty damn well that if he doesn't get that, at least promise to be able to say later when they break that promise, well, they promised us, he's in trouble. I mean, forget about the midterms or the whatever else they were worried about that come and go. He'll be in trouble, and his legacy will not be so good, and he does care about his legacy.
Well, I agree with you. He does care about his legacy, but this isn't about him. This is also about us, Paul. The Western world can't really be in a position where they can have a nuclear breakout as close as they were to it the last time. They have ballistic missiles that can reach Europe. They have ballistic missiles that will someday reach the United States. North Korea has ballistic missiles that threaten us already, and we don't want another country to have this. So this is really for us and our future generations as much as it is for anybody's legacy as president.
Well, it's also for all of Europe and many other places that apparently look the other way when all this is going on. They did not and have not stepped up to have any say in this until their oil prices went up because of the Strait of Hormuz, and all of a sudden they're all up in arms. Well, the president could have easily pulled out of all of this because we're told we already create enough oil that we don't need any oil in the Strait of Hormuz. All of them do, and they're doing nothing to open it or to defend it or anything else. So it's a bizarre thing. But let me say something else, Daron Levin. I love you as a brother. I learn from you. You're bright and all of that. So tell me why all of a sudden we don't hear about anything Israel is doing anymore. From a point in time when people were saying the Israel forced the president's hand into doing this. I don't hear anything now.
I think everybody knows that's nonsense. Nobody can force Donald Trump to do anything, least of all an Israeli prime minister. But that's just gossip. That's not reality. Israel is very, very busy right now.
The reality is we haven't heard a lot about Israel and this part of this whole battle.
Well, Israel's not maintaining the blockade of the Straits of Hormuz right now. Israel's prepared to join the battle if it becomes an air battle again, because don't forget, they don't share a border with Iran. They're 1,000 miles away. They're very busy in southern Lebanon right now trying to uproot the Hezbollah, which has all kinds of new weapons and is a client of the Iranians. And so part of what Israel is doing is confronting Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, keeping an eye out on the Hamas that's been more or less neutralized in the Gaza Strip, and waiting to see if they need to join the battle again against Iran. But that's going to be basically a call by the president and by CENTCOM, not by Netanyahu.
Hey, please give our best to your lovely wife, Adina. And it just occurred to me, I may have asked you, Daron, I don't know if I've asked you this before. You were both in the Israeli military.
Correct. We met in the IDF.
Was she an officer over you?
She wasn't my officer, but she had a rank that was far above mine, that's for sure, and much deservedly so.
Okay. It just occurred to me while we were talking. All right. God bless you, Daron.
God bless you, and thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, and let's make sure the Almighty does everything that needs to be done to make sure we have a good outcome here.
Well, they're trying to get the Pope on our side again, so we'll see how all of that works out.
We're working all the angles, Paul.
Yep, and I guess we have to. Thanks, Daron.
Thank you, sir.
Daron Levin, freelance journalist. Yes, indeed, born in Israel. Yes, indeed, served in the Israeli military along with his lovely wife, Adina. It's what they do in Israel, you know. All right, we're going to close things out with the man of the hour. Well, the man of 3 hours, really. Chad Wiebesek. He is the director of media relations at Destination Ann Arbor. There's a lot going on here. We're going to tell you all about it coming up. Stay with us. We've had so much fun here this Thursday, May 7th, live from the Mathai Botanical Garden, presented by Destination Ann Arbor. Don't forget, tonight it's the Pistons, 7 p.m. on Amazon Prime. Go Pistons. Now, we continue our relentless positive radio with a very nice guy who made all of this possible, Chad Wiebesek. He's the director of media relations here at Destination Ann Arbor. And what a nice time to have us during National Travel and Tourism Week. And it's a great time to visit, too. Nice to see you. Thanks for having us, Chad.
Good to see you, Paul. Thanks for being here. And you're right. It's so timely to have you here during National Travel and Tourism Week, because it's really a chance to remind people that travel isn't just about vacations. It's, you know, when people go to a community and they visit, they support local businesses and restaurants and hotels, and they really contribute to the quality of life to people that live there.
Right. You cannot overplay the importance of travel and what that means, which is why our whole Pure Michigan theme has been so successful, most successful, I think, plan or program ever, and is copied by other states now all the time, which is, you know, a wonderful compliment. It's so very important. And spring is a great time to visit, especially our Ann Arbor area.
Yeah, spring is really when the area starts to come especially alive, I think. It's when our season really opens up to beautiful outdoor spaces like what you're seeing here at the Botanical Gardens. We have patios that are opening up in our downtown districts. We have tons of festivals and events that are all starting to ramp up. So it's a great time to plan a weekend here, whether you're coming for the food or the art or the culture. And there's really a lot happening this time of the year.
There is indeed. Chad Wiebesick, who is the Director of Media Relations at Destination Ann Arbor, which is a 501c6 not-for-profit organization. The mission, to enhance the economy of the Ann Arbor area and Washtenaw County in general through the promotion of the area as a destination for day and, for that matter, overnight visitors, elevating the economic vitality, connecting our communities through the power of travel, with a great vision, unforgettable destination that celebrates curiosity and inspires discovery. And there are, indeed, some key events and festivals coming up, not the least of which would be, for example, the Taste of Ann Arbor at the end of the month, unless there's one before that even.
Yeah, well, this our calendar is completely jam-packed this time of the year. I'll start first, like, on the hospitality side. We've had some exciting hotels.
New hotels.
Yeah, that have just opened up recently. So the AC Hotel Ann Arbor Downtown just opened up earlier this year, and it's right in the heart of downtown across from City Hall. And it's really cool because it adds just another modern hotel option for people who want to be close to the restaurants and all the awesome shopping downtown.
Yeah.
And then there's another hotel called the Residence Inn Ann Arbor South. It just opened this week, as a matter of fact. They add 139 extended stay rooms right off of I-94 by State Street. So that's important because we serve a lot of different types of visitors, from leisure travelers to families and university guests and business travelers. So it's just great to have different options to stay in different parts of town.
Absolutely. And the Taste of Ann Arbor I mentioned, by the way, pack a lunch if you're going to be on M14 because of the construction that's going on. But you can tour the Ann Arbor restaurants that'll be set up along Main Street as food vendors sharing their favorite menu samples. Tickets are $1.
Yeah.
$1 each. Items range in price from 1 to 6 tickets. Obviously, the prices vary and as being celebrated on Main Street, downtown Ann Arbor.
And the Taste of Ann Arbor is fantastic because dining is such a big part of why people travel. And visitors want these memorable experiences. And so, you know, the dining scene continues to deliver that. And you heard from Chef Joe earlier.
Right.
We have James Beard Award winning chefs and experiences here.
That's at Echelon, if I'm not mistaken, right, if I remember. And now I'm looking at how many wonderful things. We're going to have to go quickly here. The African-American Downtown Festival, June 6th. The Ann Arbor Summer Festival, June 12th through the 28th. Michigan Celtic Festival, July 10th through the 11th. Oh, the Ann Arbor Art Fair.
Of course. It's July 16th through the 18th. And about 500,000 people over the course of that time come to Ann Arbor.
And let me just say, unless this has changed, don't come on Sunday because they're gone. Is that still true?
It is. Okay. Yep, so it's the 16th through the 18th, and it's a 30-block footprint in downtown.
Oh, spectacular.
And this is the largest juried art fair of its kind in the U.S.
I cherish some of the artworks I bought in the past at the Ann Arbor Art Fair. The Manchester Chicken Broil, July 18th. That sounds good to me. Sounds and Sights Festival, July 24th through the 25th. Ann Arbor Pride, August 1st. Paint Dexter, what is that? Paint Dexter Plain Air Festival?
Yeah, so it's people that are painting outdoors. It's a French word.
Who knew? Yet another bit of knowledge that my listeners get, and I do too. Never would have known that was what that was. Live from Tolan Square, Fridays, June through September. You can go online to get all of this information at annarbor.org, annarbor.org for Destination Ann Arbor, all because of this wonderful man who hosted us today, Chad Wiebesick. Thank you, Chad.
Thank you, Paul. Great being here.
Well, it's great having you here. You have a smile on your face all the time.
Oh, thank you.
I love it when people clearly love doing what they do. You know why? Because they do the best job. I mean, you're doing a great job representing all the folks from Washtenaw County. And we've talked about great things in Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti, and all of that. Thanks to the team, Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski, Ava Demanja, Ray Templin, Renee Vitale. And don't forget the Pistons tonight, 7 o'clock on Amazon Prime. And Jeff Marcero, God bless you and your travels. Regards, Paul W. Smith.